This is Cool Science Radio. I'm Scott Greenberg. Today's guest has been called Bill Gates' favorite scientist. And with more than 40 books spanning energy, food, technology, and the environment, Václav Smil has spent decades doing something rare, helping us see the world as it actually is, not as we imagine it to be. Distinguished Professor Emeritus at the University of Manitoba and a Fellow of the Royal Society of Canada and member of the Order of Canada, Smil has a gift for turning mountains of data into clarity. His previous books include New York Times bestsellers, How the World Really Works, and Size, How It Explains the World. And now he's back with Speed, How It Explains the World. In it, he examines how our relentless pursuit of speed in production, travel, and communication shapes not just our technological landscape, but our social and environmental realities. He explains how we measure speed and reveals the theoretical limits that shape our societies and takes readers on a journey through vast timescapes of Earth's history all the way to the complexities of modern life. And in true Smil fashion, he challenges a few assumptions along the way, including whether our world is really moving as fast as we think it is. Václav Smil, welcome to Cool Science Radio. It is such an honor to have you here today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, let's just start off. The title of your book is Speed, How It Explains the World. That's a pretty bold claim. What made you convinced that speed as the single lens could reveal so much about how our world works?
Oh, definitely not a single. This is actually third book, the big book. I wrote a book about growth, and then I wrote a book about size, and now speed. So I have these three big books, growth, size, and speed, looking at the world, history, current achievements, possible futures, through these big three lenses. Because, of course, the growth has been so essential to whatever happened in our societies in the past two centuries. And so has the size, because size of just about everything increased or decreased massively. And so has the speed, really. But with speed, it's fascinating that pretty much the same like with growth, there are two kinds of speed. There is the physical speed, which is a simple definition, length over time. In metric system, that means, you know, meters per second. And then there is the speed, what I call N over T, numbers over time. And this is the one which we've been pursuing even more zealously, making more things per second, dispatching more items from Amazon warehouse per second. Right? Simply, this N over T speed is now totally dominant in human society, no matter if it's microchip or, as I say, you know, how much Microsoft sends out, how much Amazon sends out from warehouses. So let's distinguish this L over T speed, the classical physics, and N over T, number of items per time. So there are two kinds of speed, and often they get commingled. So the book deals with both kinds of speed.
Okay. Well, that's a great definition. I think most people just think of speed as length over time. So there is a different definition that we can use. But I think most people feel like the world is moving faster than ever. You push back on that a little bit. What's the most surprising piece of evidence you found that suggests we may not be accelerating quite as dramatically as we think we are?
Well, actually, there are many, many, many numbers. Let's say flying, right? Which is the summer season is coming up. Flights will be going in all directions. So we had the first commercial jetliner. If you forget about the British Comet, which was ill-fated, because it has these two catastrophic ends. So it's the Boeing 707, and that's October 1958. It traveled exactly as fast, subsonic speed, about 900 kilometers per hour, as is the latest Boeing 787. No difference. We haven't been traveling any faster since the beginning of the jet age for a variety of reasons. Right? We want to go as fast as possible, but going faster than 900 or 1,000 kilometers per hour, going above the sound barrier, brings all kinds of costs, and as we have learned, tremendous environmental impacts. So, you know, this is one of the foremost manifestations of speed, flying everywhere, but not any faster than we were in 1958, right? And I could give you many, many other examples. For example, we are talking thanks to electricity. Still, most of the electricity in the world is produced by steam turbines. You know, you heat whatever, you take coal or natural gas, burn them, generate steam, run it over steam turbine. the steam turbines in 1890s and 1900, they were not running any faster or any slower than they are running now. So the fundamental activity, supporting the civilization, modern civilization, generation of electricity by steam turbines, pretty much the same speed, about 3,600 rotations per minute, right? And so it goes for shipping, so it goes for trains. It's true that the wing is the train shipping. So now the rapid trains now go about 350 kilometers per hour, right? But they're not going 500 or 600. And it's not such, after all, at the beginning of 20th century, they were already going 120, 130. You know? So it's just a little addition. But so when you look at the speed curves, no matter for is the ship travel, air travel, land travel, it's pretty much there, right? It's, so 100 kilometers on land, 350 kilometers on rail, 900 kilometers in the air. We've been there for decades and decades.
Okay, so we're talking about technologies that have been around for decades, maybe even a century or two, when you're talking about the steam turbines that generate electricity. But you compare the adoption rate of mobile phones to radio and color television and microwave ovens and find they're remarkably similar. Now, I guess because it feels to me in human nature that we do feel like we're traveling a lot faster. What does that maybe tell you about how we actually absorb new technology at that rate?
Well, actually, some of these electronic things happen truly fast. And this is, of course, true about the smartphone, right? So, yes, and that's again, that's the other kind of speed, the adoption speed. How many new devices have been bought by people per year, right? So, that's that number over time speed. So, yes, electronics have gone tremendous and over the increases. As I said, smartphone, but the other things as well. When we introduce, let's say, CD player is now dead, but when we introduce it, it's a very steep curve, right? 1 year, there is nothing. 10 years, everybody who wants it has a CD player, right? So electronics is a perfect case of this rapid and over the something new happens, and within a decade, 15 years, everybody has it. While in the past, something happened, and it took 20, 30, 40 years for everybody to have it. Although, when you look back, because this is the part of simple electronics, the adoption of black and white TV was somewhat slower, but adoption of the color TV in the US was pretty fast. Also, it happened mostly within 10 to 20 years. So whatever has to do with electronics is have been going very fast, right? Outside of electronics, not so fast at all. Look at the electric vehicles, for example, right? I mean, China is going fast, Norway is going fast, 97% of new cars, but the US and Canada are not going fast at all. In fact, usually going backwards, right? So a few percent of new cars in US and Canada are electric vehicles, unlike in some part of Europe or especially in Norway and China. So this is a mixed bag, and we would need, or let's look at the adoption of rapid trains. Rapid trains in China from nothing in 2000 to the longest network of rapid trains in the world by now. They ran out of places to connect this rapid train. In the US, I don't have to tell you, right? California from San Francisco to Los Angeles, they've been building that link for almost as long as we have been alive, right? So some things move as they always did. Something, especially the electronics, really rapid, but some things, never seem to make progress. Europe has middle progress in terms of rapid trains, but France has them, Spain has them, but Germany doesn't have them, Poland doesn't have them. So some major countries still don't have them, right? Only China has done really this market thing. So it's always, if you want to push the case, you go, it's unprecedented. You look at whatever, you look at Spotify or smartphone and say, oh, look at the pickup, exponential increase. But many other things, pretty much the same as in the past. And many other things really, like rapid train, not going anywhere outside China and outside some countries in Europe. Very mixed bag.
Several years ago, I actually rode the maglev in China, which is an amazing technological way to transfer, to get around. And then I just actually last month, I was in Japan and took the bullet train, and wow, that was just a fantastic experience. So why do you think it is that the United States, Canada, even certain parts of Europe are lagging like that?
Well, this is a much, much wider problem going beyond, whatever runs fast beyond rapid train. This goes into, I must say, not an inability, but greatly diminish ability of Americans to build anything new. And let's say the first thing come to my mind, Rwanda, JFK. This is a still quote unquote the richest country in the world. JFK is the premier airport. There is not an even a simple underground link from JFK to Manhattan. Something unthinkable in other major cities, right? You go to Hong Kong from downtown, you go to airport in comfort, forget about, what's happening in China. So US is the only major country which doesn't have even simple transportation links between airports and downtowns. Everything is kind of, or broken or semi-broken public transport or by taxi, right? So this is a remarkable thing that US hasn't even succeeded to do something which most countries succeeded like 50 years ago, a rapid transit, some form of underground convenient rapid transit from the airport to downtown or a big city. It's not in LA, it's not in New York, it's not in Chicago, it's not anywhere in the US as far as I know. I go to Houston for this oil conference. From Houston to downtown, oh my God, it's like 1.5 hours by taxi, right? There's no rapid link there, right?
Well, maybe we aren't moving as fast as I think we are. Now, your book ranges from geological times all the way to the speed of light. How do you even begin to organize a concept that operates across such a widely different scale?
Well, it's always a challenge. So it becomes for me, because I think in terms of systems and I think in terms of big units and big ideas, for me, it's all part of one. But most people just have difficulties to putting it together because most people are not trained. In the deep, deep past, I was also trained as a geologist. And geologists think differently. 100 million years, it's not such a big deal in geology, right? Most of the plants which we see around, now finally we have this sort of summer in Canada late this year. So everything is blooming, growing green, really. Well, it's only passed for 90 million years today, which geologically speaking is only 1/10 of the age of the Earth. Because age of the Earth is more than 4 billion years. Really. So, and the age of humans. If you talk to most people, even highly educated people, you would find that they cannot tell you how old is the Homo sapiens, our species. They wouldn't tell you, right? I mean, is it 10,000 years, 100,000 years? They know it's old, really, but they don't have the feel for it because it's like with anything else. It's not only speed, it's the length and it's the mass, really. So people can imagine whatever. Oh, of course, you are the only place on the planet which is not metric yet. So I wanted to say kilogram of something, but you don't even get a kilogram. One has to say 2 pounds, right? Roughly, that's kilogram. So, people can imagine few pounds, 10 pounds, right? But if you tell people it weighs 1 million pounds, so if it actually weighs 1 million pounds, and I will tell you it's 100,000 pounds, most people wouldn't feel the mistake, right? So you can make with big numbers a mistake in order of magnitude, tenfold. Two orders, hundredfold, and most people get it because most people are not trained to think like that, no matter if it's mass or speed, right? So that's the difficulty with talking about speed, like, cosmic speeds, geological speeds, average daily speeds, right? So it's a phenomenon which ranges across many orders of magnitudes, and that makes it more difficult for people to kind of, truly absorb it, to truly get it.
All right, well, let's talk about speed a little bit more then. Your book covers the speed of planet formation and evolution of life. It also covers, what we have accomplished in terms of human achievement, breaking the sound barrier, for example, and you mentioned, for example, the high-speed rail, both in China and as I mentioned, in Japan, as well as industrial mobilization. Where do you think we've been most impressive in pushing the limits of speed currently?
Well, it's something which people will be surprised in what I say, because most people have never seen it in action. Most people just consume the fruits of it. It's the speed of large-scale, automated, mechanized industrial production. Most people have no idea how rapidly we make everything, no matter if it was, if it's a Dell computer, or if it's a zipper, or if it's a button, instantly thoughts of buttons, or shoes, or TVs or anything. So everything which could be mechanized, which is just about everything in the world today, we've achieved such rapid speed of mechanized industrial production that if you are willing to invest into it and specialize in it, you can become globally dominant. And this is what China has done. All you have to do is to invest into rapid production of zippers, and bingo, one town in China is producing zippers for the whole planet, right? Most people don't realize it, but this is how it is, right? So rapid it can be, right? That one town in China is producing more than 90% of zippers for the whole world, right? And of course, you've heard recently all these stories about how Chinese are producing more than 90% of all photovoltaic panels, right? Not in one factory, but again, you know, they're producing so rapidly. So this is the thing which to me is most, this is why you go to Walmart or Home Depot and the stuff is falling on your head, literally. You know, there are zillions of different items. Or you go to Amazon and they have like, you know, 80 different kinds of everything or 200 different kinds of everything, right? Because it's produced so rapidly, hence so cheaply, because the price depends on the rapidity of production, right? If it takes you a week to produce a watering can, well, you know, watering can will be precious, right? You can buy a watering can for $4 made from plastic in China because they made million of them per day, literally, okay? So this is what the most remarkable thing, the speed of mass scale industrial production of everything, you know, from groceries to cars, from electronics to consumer items.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we are in conversation with a distinguished professor emeritus at the University of Manitoba, the very, very sought-after Václav Smil. We are talking about his new best-selling book, Speed: How It Explains the World. And it is such a pleasure to have him here with us on Cool Science Radio. You argue in your book that faster isn't always better. Where do you think our obsession with speed has caused the most harm? Do you think it's environmentally, socially, otherwise, something I'm not thinking about?
I think, you know, there are many answers to this. From a personal level, I mean, accelerating. For there are some people who absolutely hate to go fast, but most people love going fast. As I say, it's the feeling of, you know, it's something totally different. So once we got the means, don't forget, for a long time, we have no means to go fast, right? The fastest horse ride, not so fast, right? You know, fastest sail, even the famous American Clippers built in Boston, you know, these great ships, right, of 1840s, 50s, 60s. Hey, you go about 40 kilometers per hour, okay, in the open sea. And that's not very fast, right? So, but once we got the means going fast, boy, we relaxed on it rapidly. By 1900, we get car races where people are going 100 kilometers per hour. By 1900, right? The first car, 1884, 1885, Daimler, Benz, right? Maybach. So, you know, within 15 years, you are racing 100 kilometers per hour. So there is something which is just totally, you know, totally bewitching for many people, right? So that's one thing. The other thing, as I say, if you have a society with 8 billion people, and you want to increase their standard of living, you have to produce their consumer items on food pretty fast. So partially that speed has been inevitable. We have to up our speed. If we would have been producing whatever, you know, the light bulbs or cars before Ford, 1908, before Model T, we were producing cars in an artisanal manner. They're producing cars like bikes at the time, you know. They were built one by one from all kinds of parts by groups of people. So at that level, you could never have global automobilization, which we have now. So partially it was sort of this enchantment, this speed. Partially it was the necessity to speed up the industrial production, to raise the living standards of billions of people, which was totally unprecedented, right? So there are many reasons, but as I stress in the book in so many ways, in many ways, we have run to the limits, not only to the limits which I already mentioned, like limits of travel. We have run into limits of how rapidly we can produce food. We are not increasing our yields very much, and there is not much more arable land to expand. Whatever. So we are running into all kinds of physical limits of speed. And this is just a simple fact, because after all, this is a finite planet.
Well, one area that I think we have an amazing advantage in speed, or there's been certainly progress of speed. You and I right now are talking over a Zoom link where I can
Exactly.
see you can see me. So technology has really advanced.
Absolutely.
And fortunately, my internet speed, I can see you and hear you very, very clearly. So what about technology and the speed with the growth that's happening?
But as I say, you know, this is what it is because it's true. It's another form of enchantment. All these electronics, no matter if it's in your ears or if you look at it, whatever. So undoubtedly, you know, this has been the fastest speed gain in many ways. In ways how it itself operates, because our chips are now faster, right? In the way it's been adopted, because once you introduce it, no matter what it is, right? You know, internet, smartphone, Skype, within 10 years, just about everybody on the planet or 20 years is using it. So there have been many speeds in terms of electronics, all thanks to what Richard Feynman so famously said, because there is so much room at the bottom, right? Because as long as you can miniaturize things, right, you can speed things up. But as you know, we are all limiting, we are only running to the limits there because we will not be, because everything depends on how many lines to connect we can etch on that superconducting material, right? And there is a limit to it because it's limited by the wavelengths, right? And we cannot go below certain wavelengths. So we will not be able to place an infinite or very, very large number of these connections on a microchip. So that too is coming to the limit. Not tomorrow, but within a foreseeable time. So simply, you know, after all, fundamentally, it's a physical universe. So there is a limit to everything. And I, for one, do not subscribe for a second to what Ray Kurzweil tells us, that we are running towards singularity, and by 2045, everything on the planet will be expanding. And just try to imagine that, I repeat it, everything will be at the speed of light into the universe, the human machine intelligence. Just try to imagine that human machine intelligence expanding into the universe at the speed of light by 2045. My brain is too primitive to grasp that, really, right?
Well, you talk about the physical limitations of our current technology in terms of how much we can get on a microchip, for example. But what about quantum computing and the quantum mechanics? I know it's not here yet, but isn't it on the horizon? And that's going to be a game changer for speed.
Here I claim ignorance, as they say in business, above my pay grade. Much like the fusion, right? Much like the fusion. About fusion, I know a great deal actually, but you know, so I do not think we will have a quantum chip civilization run by fusion electricity in 10 or 15 years, right? But as I say, above my pay grade.
Well, I do love, because you are actually known for being skeptical of hype and technological optimism. So that just fit right
And let me
into
tell you that whenever I have been skeptical so far, I have been right, right? It pays off to be skeptical, right? Very much so, because as you see, we are not traveling to Mars. Remember Elon in 2014, he said by 2022 or 23, there'll be first settlement on Mars. Of course, he also said by 2022, everything will be connected by Hyperloop going at the speed of sound. Have you ever seen any Hyperloop? You remember that was the big thing, right? Big company, Hyperloop was to connect every city on the planet, right? Already by 22. And this should have been our third year on the Mars now, right? Et cetera, et cetera. So all I'm saying, you know, if you are skeptical about these super claims by Elon and company and others, you are in a good company and there's a high chance that you'll be right again and again.
I certainly wish we had much more time to discuss, but in wrapping up, after writing this book, has your own relationship with speed changed? The pace at which maybe you work or travel or consume information yourself, what's changed, if anything?
To me personally, no, because I never in my life have I bought a speedboat or a sports car. As I say, I cannot claim that I've never surpassed the speed. I mean, I speed it in my car, you know. I'm this utilitarian guy. For me, car is a machine on rubber wheels to go from A to B. But sure, you know, I do speed occasionally, and I find it mildly enjoyable. But I would never buy a sports car or sports boat, and I'm never in favor of space travel, things like that. So my personal attention to speed is just kind of very modest, you know. I'm not a speed demanding guy.
Well, I hope that you never, ever slow down. Vaclav Smil, author of Speed, How It Explains the World, has been our guest on Cool Science Radio today. Vaclav, thank you so much for being here today. It's been a genuine pleasure.
As you Americans say, it's been fun. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.